Shout out to Claritev for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
What's interesting is, like, with the virtual stuff recently that I've been doing, if I can't see the audience, I'm imagining them.
Oh.
Right? And I do stuff like to engage them. I'll say stuff like, let's have a super interactive conversation here. And they know that it's complete BS because I can't see them. And I'll be like, so raise your hand if you're wearing your pajama pants. Yes. Okay, good. Got your coffee, your water, like what, you know, and I'll be like, okay, I'll ask them a question. And I'm like, I want you, because if we were live together, you know, we would be, you'd be yelling this back out to me. So just yell it out at your computer screen, like I can hear it. So I'll ask a question and then I'll lean, I'll lean in for the answer. So I'm like, yeah, okay, okay, good, great. That's not the answer. This is the answer. And, you know, so there's stuff you can do if you're having fun with yourself. Your audience will, in their own way, have some fun too. Even in a virtual scene.
What's up, guys? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mershaz, and I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen, The Greatness Machine is about two things. Number one, people are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world. Doing both of these despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews of world-class speakers and business leaders, showcasing their origin story, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now, so it can help you step into your greatness within your own life, business, and career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years in entrepreneurship as a CEO to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation and messages, and I'm stoked to have you guys here. Well, guys, welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mershaz, today. And like I said, we have amazing guest in Stephanie Paul. Welcome to the show. Guys, as you know, we are The Greatness Machine, and we're all about bringing people on here who are living their passions to create greatness in the world. And Stephanie is neither short of nor passion nor greatness. So I'm so happy to have her here. But before we get started, a couple of things. First of all, we are live. So start a watch party if you're on Facebook. You're going to want to share this. It's going to be quite an entertaining hour. If you were even on our pre-show, you would have been like, dude, I can't wait till the real show starts. So the real show has begun. Ask questions. The team's on standby. They will be shooting questions our way. So don't be shy. Don't be that weird voyeurist that's like sitting in the corner peeking. It's kind of weird. And last but not least, let's have some fun. But before we get started, I'm going to forward out my script go. Damn it. Stephanie, did you hide
this
my script?
Was improv. You told me this was totally an improv interview. Yeah, you got a script. Like, where is the trust? The trust is gone.
I know. I'm fucking with you. But anyway. Hide on that tree. No, I always have my bio, though. My bio is the part where I kind of have it there just because I want to not mess it up. Is that cool?
Yep. The stuff that you've been digging up about me.
Yeah, there's so much dirt. I would, if you were Trump, you would be totally hosed right now.
Well, I have played the president in a movie.
Oh, I think I saw that. Didn't you play Sarah Palin in a movie?
Yeah, they made me look like Sarah Palin, but it was terrifying because at the time it was when Tina Fey was doing all that amazing comedy work around her, and I remember saying to the director, like, "Do I have to be Sarah Palin?" And he's like, "Oh, no. We're just making you look like Sarah Palin." He goes, "It's a representation of a parody of presidents." So he's like, "You can be whoever you want." So I actually studied George Bush Jr. And if you, in the movie, a lot of my mannerisms are very similar to his because I thought he was physically the funniest president that I had seen in research. So that's
I want to give your bio and then I'm going to come right back to this conversation. So obviously you're an actor, former actor. I don't know. Once you're an actor, you're always an actor, right? Isn't that how it is?
I think so. You're always performing somewhere.
Right. So actor, entrepreneur, founder at Stephanie Paul Inc., coach, speaker, comedian, improvisational superstar. You've spoken on stages all over the world, mm-hmm. but most notably, you are now a trainer, with a knack for connecting people in meaningful and engaging ways from the boardroom to the showroom. Mm-hmm. And I read that you're a laughter yoga trainer.
Yes.
So you don't know this. Before I'd sang on the show, which now is my shtick, I used to make people do yoga laughs. Mm-hmm. So you being a laughter yoga trainer, can you train me for like 10 seconds?
First of all, the first rule of laughter yoga is feel no pain, do no harm, right?
Okay.
So, and laugh yoga essentially is pranayama, breathing and movement. So all we're going to do is move and we're going to add some laughter to that. So most people assume that laughter needs some form of humor or joke in order to do it, but it's an absolute lie. It's not true at all. What happens when you start laughing, it fires off the mirror neurons in my brain and yours, and we connect. It's the most contagious behavior that we actually have. And when we do it, we release about 11 wonderful chemicals like oxytocin, dopamine, all those kind of things that make you feel like fabulous and high. And the longest I've actually laughed in a group without stopping is 10 minutes.
What?
And it was exhausting, I'll tell you that right now. And the best way to do it is on the floor with your heads facing each other, but we can't do that today.
Okay.
So you could do some sort of exercise. They have really basic exercises, but have you got your phone in front of you?
I do.
Okay, so we'll do telephone laughter, right? So you're going to look at your phone and you're going to tell like you're listening and you can hear me and we're going to laugh together. Well, we get to the end of that and we go, very good, very good, yay! And that's how we end an exercise. So there you go.
I love that. So my favorite part is it feels like I just did drugs. Not that I've ever done drugs.
Well, you know, it's really... I didn't know about that either.
Nope.
It's kind of interesting because I had a woman once, she said to me, can you do some, like you just said, laughter yoga with me? And I kind of wanted to intensify it for her. And because she really was sort of a non-believer. And I said, okay, let's do this exercise. I said, check in with your body. Tell me, just sort of close your eyes and breathe gently. And just, how do you feel? Are there any aches and pains? Are you uncomfortable anywhere? Do you feel tired? Whatever. Just sort of give yourself a full body check. And when she sort of done with that, I said, okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to hug each other and we're going to laugh. So I'm going to start laughing and you're not going to be able to, even if you feel stupid, you're still going to keep laughing. And she's like, okay, so, and we had somebody time it for a minute. So we hugged each other and we laughed for a minute. And then when the timer went off, we broke. And I said to her, how do you feel? And she goes, oh my God, I'm high. She's like, I feel euphoric. And I'm like, it's awesome, right?
yeah. Oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, just all the big soup.
Yep.
I love it. Yeah. So like last year I had this like brutal, brutal, brutal fucking year. I mean, it was like really, really brutal. And so I don't remember where something came like to my brain where I was like, I'm just going to ask he was five at the time, I guess, maybe six, my 6-year-old. I'm like, hey, come give me a hug. And I would make him give me like 10 hugs a day. And I swear to God, I would go from like not feeling good to actually like, to your point, not 100% euphoric, but I felt good. And I was like, oh, I'm just hacking my chemical.
Serotonin, touch releases serotonin and oxytocin.
Oxytocin, right, yeah.
But you can, dopamine is the most addictive one of all those ones in there. And
yeah.
I'm going to say this wrong because it's one of those big long words, but it's like acetylcholine, something like that. When we release that chemical, it either happens at trauma or it happens at euphoric, like high laughter, that kind of thing. And if you want to change a belief system, a mindset, a habit, you kind of want to get that drug involved.
Wow.
And then you want to bring out the dopamine so that with each little win, you give yourself a hit of dopamine and you can get that chemical to release when you're at, well, basically what happens, it shows up at a heightened experience, right?
Right.
So like, bang, wake up, see this, remember this. And so you can get that back when you meditate and breathe in certain ways. So it's one of my fun techniques to use with clients who are working on different habits, changes, mindset, belief system, those kind of things.
That's so cool. So let's chop that up. Let's get into that. So you were a performer for many years, and I guess, you know, did a lot of stuff. It was amazing because I was introduced to you from the perspective of what you're doing now. And if I just go to, you know, your Stephanie Paul, is it like corp or something.com?
StephaniePaulInc.com.
Sorry. Which is like very like StephaniePaulInc.com. It's like very businessy.
Sorry.
It has like a briefcase attached to it, right? I open the briefcase up. I'm like, oh, okay. Like TEDx, you know, you and I had a conversation of how you did a TED in Iran. Like you're training speakers, you're executive producing events, you're working with corporate individuals to help them, you know, put together their keynotes, like very, very businessy, right? And then I start digging and there's like just so much gold.
We gotta have fun, right?
Oh man, I was like, dude, you need to open the briefcase up and show some of that stuff off because that's some cool stuff. So yeah, tell us your background. Like, how did you, we know where you are right now. And I want to go there that you're doing this really businessy.
Okay, I'll go back in the history.
Yes. Go.
I started dance at the age of 4 and I did that for 12 years. I started drama at the age of 10. I started professionally working at the age of 16 as an actor. And I was also a professional dancer for 2 years from 16 to 18. And when I sort of, I also modeled around in 8 different countries around the world, but I honestly don't like telling people that.
Yeah, it's no big deal. Just modeled in eight countries around the world.
The only time I ever got canned from a job, and that's a pun actually, because it was a Versace runway collection in Milan, and I got canned because of my cans. They were too big.
What? Wait. They fired you because you were too curvaceous?
My cup size was too big. They wanted like cup. You know, coat hanger model. So
yeah, this was like what's her face? The girl from the UK was very popular for that. You know, we don't know names. Remember, we were joking about that.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Kate Moss.
I actually met her. She wasn't very nice when I met her, but I don't want to go down that road. I was at a party one night in Paris. But anyway, I'm not name dropping. It's not.
Yeah, this one night after my Versace runway where I got fired, Kate Moss and I got into it in Paris.
Quite, but
I'm not a big name dropper.
I digress. Okay, so I kind of traveled the world working as a model for a few years, and then I got back to New Zealand and I was like, well, what am I going to do? And one thing I noticed was I loved shooting commercials and I loved the acting stuff. So I decided to, I literally interviewed all my friends in the film industry and said, ask them, should I go to film school? Should I not go to film school? What should I do? And basically they all said, either way, you start at the bottom. And a lot of them thought film school was a waste of time because you learn a lot more on set. So I decided if I wasn't working in front of the camera or on stage or whatever, I was going to be behind the scenes. So I worked as an agent for a couple of years. I worked in lighting. I worked in locations. I worked in catering. I worked in wardrobe, makeup. I did everything except for sound. So if I wasn't here, I was, you know, back there doing something. And I learned how to produce. I got a couple of mentors that were producers and directors, and that was sort of what I did. So I was on both sides of the fence whenever that's how I made my money for many years. And then I went through a divorce, and at the same time, I sort of wanted to get out of Hollywood and move to the beach. I wanted to get out of my marriage too. So it was just everything was superficial around me, and I'm like, that's not who I am. And I kind of had this tool set or skill set that I wanted to figure out a way to give it to other people so that, many people say you're given your gifts and you've got to give them away. And I absolutely believe that. So I moved to the beach to lick my wounds and figure things out and start to learn to understand myself and how I got to this place. And I was writing for a publication in Europe. I was doing a lot of comedy and travel coverage. And I was teaching an acting class in a local town. And one of my students was a professor at Chapman University, and he said to me, you know, you should do this in the corporate world. No, don't be ridiculous. What the hell do I know about the corporate world? And he's like, no, seriously, like the corporate world needs to learn how to connect and be entertaining, engaging, and all that kind of stuff. And never really thought about it after that. And then they did an article in the local newspaper about me because where I live, San Clemente, they've got Nixon and the presidential la la la, and I play the president of the United States in Iron Skies. We talked about earlier the Palin-esque character. And they thought that was cool, and the movie was coming out. So after that article was released, I got my first two clients in the corporate world. Nice. They contacted me and were like, hey, can you help me with this? And I was like, sure. I have no idea what I'm doing. But, you know, and then I realized that I could do it. That gave me the confidence to move forward the next step. I started doing the stand-up stuff. I loved improv, although it scared the hell out of me. I knew it was a really good tool, and I did that for 12 years. And the reason why I did the stand-up, there's always logical reason for me to shift gears. It's kind of weird, but I knew that I wanted to differentiate myself in LA from other women that looked like me. And there was no woman back then, like, you know, looked like me that were doing stand-up. So it was like a way that I could. And then about 2 years after I started stand-up, of course, everybody wanted funny woman, you know, and all that. And then everybody else started doing stand-up, whatever. So that was that road, because I skipped that, sorry. And then I started looking for mentors and a business coach, because I'd never run a business before. I mean, I knew how to budget and produce stuff, like produce right. live events. I'd produced, you know, video content and all that kind of stuff. I'd produced many comedy shows on a big scale. So that side of it was easy, but the actual running of a business and, you know, right. ROI and like sales and all that kind of stuff was very different. So I got some mentors around me. I got into a mastermind group of CEOs.
Okay.
And that was all really, really helpful. And then it was sort of like, you know, you need to target a market. You know, you've got to have a niche market. Mm. Everybody keeps telling me. But and I was a little resistant for that, because essentially what I was teaching people is a tool that everybody needs: engagement, communication, like, you know, humor, empathy, sincerity, transparency, and the way you communicate, those kind of things, you know. But I decided, okay, well, I'll go after niche market. So I went after sort of biotech, technology, that kind of arena. And I knew to go after that market, first of all, I was going to have a lot of clients, because a lot of people are very dry, data-driven, you know. Yeah. And the other thing was that because technology is always moving forward, there was always going to probably be work in that area for me.
Right.
And but I knew I couldn't just show up to a bunch of scientists and tech geeks and say, hey, I'm going to teach you some acting techniques and it's going to be funny. So that's when I started going down the rabbit hole of the science and the biology and the right. neuroscience behind why all the entertainment stuff works. And I am having so much fun in that area, learning all about that kind of stuff. And it's so much, when you understand the biology, it's so much easier to do all the tasks and the habits, I think, versus, I think people, you know, people say to me all the time, like, how do you make someone funny? Like, how do you teach someone to be funny? And I'm like, I don't. You're the funniest person you know. I can't teach you how to be funny, but I can guarantee you've made your family members laugh, your colleagues laugh, your kids laugh, your whatever, because 86% of what we laugh at is commonality. It's got nothing to do with jokes or humor or stand-up or anything like that. It's like, oh, my God, you broke your ankle. I broke my ankle too. I got hit by a bus. You know, that's when we both go, yeah, man, high five. It's
right.
And that's that. Once people realize that it's that easy, and they're like, oh, really? And, you know, the online training thing that I'm building right now, one of the things that I talk about, because we just finished editing a whole bunch of videos yesterday, that's why it's fresh in my mind, is I talk about, you know, a simple thing to shift. If you want to shift something simple for engagement, is start practicing smiling, right? Just start practicing smiling at everybody, the dog, the cat, the tree, the whatever. Like, that in itself will release serotonin in your body, right? If you hold a pencil between your teeth for 20 seconds, serotonin will start to release in your body. So you can automatically engage your body to start feeling better and releasing the chemicals that makes you feel joy.
Right.
And then when you're feeling joy, you will give it to somebody else automatically. You'll energetically lift the room and you choose to do it. Our emotions are our choice. And when you understand that, because our emotions are essentially just chemicals, that's all they are. They're just chemicals that get created in our body. And then we get what we call feelings, right, from those emotional or those chemical changes. And we can do whatever we want with that. It's our choice. Somebody wants to get really, really angry. That's because they're allowing their limbic system, their you know, reptilian brain to take over and not allow their neocortex to shift gears and kick in. And that's our logical, reasonable brain. So, you know, it's all biology, and breath work has a lot to do with it, you know, and you can change your brain by changing your body and vice versa. So
yeah, that's so cool. I don't call them feelings. I call them the feels. That's my, I own that, by the way, in case you're wondering.
It's trademarked. Okay.
It's trademarked. Yeah. Yeah. My buddy's top patent attorney and trademark attorney in Silicon Valley. So anyone out there that thinks that they own the word, the feels, I also own the word bay. I don't know if you know that, but anyway, that's yeah. There's some hip hop people that are going to rent that from me. You guys know who you are. We do have, yeah, sorry, Beyonce. That, yeah, Jay-Z's not your bae. He's babe. And when you pay me, he becomes bae. We have a question, though, from the audience. Do you think everyone can be funny, or are there some that are not just not funny, no matter how much training? Yeah, yeah, you suck. You're just not funny. Just shut the fuck up. No, seriously. Honestly, I was actually thinking the same thing. I'm like, dude, I know tons of people who are not funny.
They are in their own way, and they can probably make themselves laugh in their own way when they want to. But there's super simple techniques that you can learn, you know, as far as, I mean, you could go and get a joke book and learn how to write jokes. There's plenty of, like, you know, comedic, I can't even say the word right now. I feel like Ken in the Fiscal Wonder.
Today, Junior. No.
There's plenty of comedy gurus out there that you can buy their books and you can learn how to joke write and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, simple, like, at commonalities, I get a laugh every single time I do this. And I talk about it every single time I get interviewed because it's just so simple. It's that old joke of, like, when you walk into a room and everybody's wearing black and somebody else is wearing red and you're like, hey, Jason, didn't you get the memo? You know, and everybody laughs, yeah, including Jason. And it's, you know, it's just this weird thing, but it's commonalities. And when you start acknowledging that, or, you know, do something as simple as, like, walk into an elevator filled with people, not that we're going to get that right now at the moment, but, you know, and turn around and be like, you know what, it's much nicer, this view, you know, and just and people will just be like, oh, that's kind of weird. But they smile because you're doing so, you know, it's entertaining. It's just simple, yeah, little things like that. You don't have to have extraordinarily talented writing skills or anything like that. You just have to have joy and be willing to have fun and play. Our brains love play. You know, there's a bunch of studies around, and I started learning all this with the laughter because I'm a laughter yoga trainer and leader. So there you go. I'm training.
My bad. I didn't give you what you deserve.
Yeah. Leaders are here and trainers are here. So I'm studied both.
Is there, like, a grand master above that you?
Yeah, well, Dr. Kataria in India, he started laughter yoga.
Oh, cool.
There's actually a laughter quotient that was designed by a friend of mine with a bunch of mathematicians and scientists, and that's Merv Neal. If you really want to go down the laughter road, he's done a lot of science stuff behind it and studies with dialysis patients and things like that. I mean, he has a business around it because he almost died. He got very, very sick, and the hospital basically told him, go home and, you know, get your things in order because you're going to be dead in 2 months. And he started laughing uncontrollably, and he wasn't doing it on purpose. It wasn't like, you know, Norman Cousins, who did the first laughter yoga study back in the 20s. And he couldn't figure it out. And it had been going on for 3 weeks, but he'd been getting better. And he went back to the hospital and he's like, okay, I have no idea what's going on. Can you tell me? And they were like, we have no idea what's going on, but you're getting better. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And he goes, I just can't stop laughing. And they're like, well, keep doing it. Finally, he found an Indian doctor who actually said, well, what's happened here is that your brain-body connection is switched, right? So your body has taken over and your body's decided it's going to heal itself. So your brain's not really involved in this process. And then he started learning more about it and whatever. And we connected through the laughter yoga community at a conference in San Diego. And he taught a business class to teach people, you know, and he's Australian, but yeah, he's super into it. He's done a lot of, I often check in with him and, like, hey, what's the latest science going on in the laughter community, mm-hmm, when I'm writing a paper or something like that? Cause he's usually pretty onto it.
That's cool.
Well, I digress. I went down a rabbit hole then, didn't I?
No, yeah, that's cool. So I have a couple questions though. So you obviously were trained in the art of entertainment, right? And you, I mean, when you both from the production side as well as the, you know, actual participant, acting, actress, actor side. So, and comedy and dancing and modeling. And so like when you're doing all those things, you're like, you're kind of like on, you know, you're on camera, you're in front of the mirror, you're having to like look at yourself in a pretty vulnerable state a lot, you know? And I would say you're also, this is just at least my read, is like, you're kind of naked, right? You have to like look and say like, what makes me look my best? When do I look like shit? Because everyone's looking at me, right? And then you have to perfect the art of looking a certain way. Isn't that a lot of what that is?
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius from Shazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now. And let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life. Canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now. And let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, use as directed. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and Supply and Demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Darius.
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I was worried about all that kind of stuff. I mean, I still don't like that I'm getting older and, you know, the pounds are coming on, you know, if, you know, as you get older. I mean, I work out, I eat healthy and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I think I'm less cognitive of that looking perfect type thing. And I'm more interested in actually engaging and connecting and, I suppose you'd say, doing my job, achieving the task at hand. You know, I remember when I was modeling and acting and stuff and on camera, I would often, if I wasn't happy with my wardrobe or my hair or whatever, there was only one time that I complained about the wardrobe and I was like, I am not wearing that fucking dress. And I actually had a designer friend who donated a dress to me for the movie for that particular scene, because I was not wearing the dress the wardrobe mistress had for me, and they didn't have a huge budget to go out and buy me more stuff. But most of the time, my attitude was, if the client was happy, I was happy.
Right. The reason I brought it up, though, was that when you're trained, obviously you got comfortable with doing it, but from that training to then move that into private enterprise, right? Because I'm asking from the position of an executive and CEO, that when you come into a room and you're watching how someone presents to each other, how they're interacting with each other, I got to assume there's so many nuances to the way they're standing, the way they're sitting, their eye contact, all these things that you just probably after you know, decades of doing this, you just knew it, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're in a room full of people that have zero awareness around this, unless they have very, very just high natural intuitive communication skills. And so when you walk into a room, and because I see this, right? Like, I actually think I have pretty high intuitive communication skills. At least I tell myself that. Maybe I'm wrong, but
belief system is everything.
Yeah. It doesn't even matter if I don't, I still do. But I notice lots of people, because most people are very self-involved and depending on their level of empathy and EQ and all those things, and then training, they may or may not know how are they meeting people where they're at. And when I hear you talk about the things you're doing, I'm hearing you teach people to bring themselves where others are at so that they can connect and make connection. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, okay. So there was a study released in Forbes magazine, which I found really interesting. It was a few years ago now. It was from a research study done, I think it was UCLA, I'm remembering off the top of my head. And they were looking for what people found is likability traits in other human beings. And one would think that might be, you know, sexy, gorgeous, rich, whatever, but it's not. The three top traits that they found that were very, very consistent across the research was sincerity, transparency, and empathy. And I like to add humor to that, because there's another study that was done at Berkeley over many decades with couples who divorced or stayed together, and the couples that stayed together had a lot of humor around a lot of the stress in their lives, you know, like difficulties with financial, whatever that was. So, and we all know that you look at, it's been years since I've been on the dating circuit, but you know, everyone on those dating websites, people say, oh, you know, I really want someone who's got a great sense of humor. Everybody wants to be around people who are funny or humorous, or, you know, have a great energy about them. And, you know, so that's like super important. And one of the things that was very intriguing for me as I'm going through this process of learning about myself and building my business and learning the science and things, a few people over the course of maybe 3 or 4 months had said to me, like, the one specific incident that I'm going to share is I was at my CEO meeting with all my other, you know, colleagues and or peers or whatever. And one of the women in the group, her brother had died 2 weeks previously, and she decided to come to the group. And one of the things that we did is we'd go around at the beginning of the meeting and we'd sort of catch up. Okay, this is what's happening in my business. This is the problem that I have. This is what's happening in my family, my personal life. And then at the end of it, you'd say, I'm from 0 to 10, 0 being horrible and 10 being elated about my life right now. And she said, well, I would probably say that I was a 5, but because Stephanie's in the room, I'm a 7.5. And I was super confused by that. I was like, what does that mean? Because it was like the third time I'd heard it in a recent, you know. And so I pulled her aside at the end of the meeting and I said, what do you mean by that? And she goes, well, you just show up and bring joy and it shifts the energy of the room. Like, you lift it somehow. And I was like, that's amazing. Like, I had no idea that that's what I had the potential to do. And it took me back to an interesting article that I read once, and I'll never forget this. Somebody was writing a story about Marilyn Monroe and how she was out with her friend on Rodeo Drive, and her friend was walking down the street with her. There's lots of people milling around and shopping, and she says to her, nobody recognizes you. Nobody knows that, you know, that you're Marilyn Monroe. What's the deal? And she goes, oh, it's because I'm not turned on. She's like, what? And she goes, watch this. Marilyn Monroe apparently switched her energy turned it on, and then suddenly everybody saw her. And ever since I heard that, I've got goosebumps telling you the story.
Wow.
I was like, I wonder if I can do that too. And I started, I would shift my energy when I walked into rooms. If I didn't want to be seen, or I wanted to be seen, or I wanted to bring joy, or whatever that was. Or, and then the laughter yoga stuff, when I learned that, I just start laughing. I just start, something will be said, and I'll just start laughing because I can feel the energy in the room going south, and I'll just bring it back with joy and laughter. And these things are possible. So I basically, when I started my business, I was doing it backwards, in my opinion. I was looking at the content first. So what are we going to write? Who, what are we going to say? What is our message? What are our images? You know, how are we going to paint this picture kind of deal? And to me, that's the last component. That's the last thing that should even be looked at. First, you want to know thyself, like Socrates said, and I take a deep dive with my clients. I'm now certified in five sciences, which is DISC, which is behavioral, behavior that we can see. And I can usually guess somebody's DISC before I even run their science because it shows up in the way they behave. And then 12 driving forces, which is our motivators, and that's internal psychology motivators, things that motivate us and make us do things and go places. And then EQ, which we talked about, emotional quotient or intelligence. And then DNA, which is a science based around 25 soft skills like leadership, negotiation, those types of things. And then the last one is HD acumen, which is basically your capacity to view the world and understand it and view yourself and understand it. So it's it takes about an hour to complete all the sciences when my clients sit down and do it. And it takes us probably about 3 hours to unpack it. We usually separate it into the first two, EQ, and then the last two. The last two can change based on, what's happening in your world. Like if you're in the middle of a shitstorm and a really hard project and you're working 18 hours, it's obviously going to be a very different read than if you've, a year later, you've finished that project and now you're on vacation for a month in Hawaii with a Mai Tai, so it's just different.
Are you guys enjoying the show so far? Darius here, and by now you might know that I'm passionate about a few things. Pizza, pink unicorns, core values, and down dirty, interesting conversation with some amazing people. However, the biggest one that I've spent most of my career on is entrepreneurship and scale. You see, look, my first few years in business, I spent like probably a good 5 years of my life getting my freaking teeth kicked. I mean, really getting crushed. And I learned a lot during that time period. So I spent the greater part of the last couple of years helping entrepreneurs scale their businesses in a meaningful way without going through the same growing pains that I did. And what I realized is that CEOs and business leaders don't know if they can scale, and thus they do the right thing at the wrong times. This causes them to lose clarity, lose momentum, alignment, and the bottom line is you lose money. And look, you don't have to do that. It's why I created what I call the Scalability Assessment, and you can access it 100% for free. That's right, guys. There are perks to listening to The Greatness Machine. All you have to do is go to dariusscale.com. That's D-A-R-I-U-S scale, S-C-A-L-E.com. And there, you can check to see if your business is set up to scale properly. It's going to give you a scalability score at the end, and it's also going to give you some clarity on what you can do next. Once again, guys, that's www.itsdariusscale.com. Once again, guys, it's dariusscale.com. And now back to the show.
So just because I want to make sure the audience is clear on this.
Sure.
The reason your clients are working with you, and there's many reasons, but one of the big ones and how you and I got introduced was around doing keynotes, right? Mm-hmm. And so can you kind of give a list of what products or what services you're training to, and then we'll dive into your process?
Okay. So, I work with speakers predominantly. The other thing that's really funny is a lot of my clients are executives. And once they work with me, they're like, I've got a couple of employees that need your help. Could you come in and work with them? Or could you come in and do a team training on culture and empathy and sincerity and listening to each other? Essentially communication. And so any form of communication, like last week I gave a keynote presentation to 100 people on a WebEx. Which was super, it's super weird talking to a wall, like, hey, how's it going? Like, and they're trying to get my keynote out there and like, no feedback. Okay.
No read. It's the worst.
It was successful. So A lot of my clients have shifted from the obviously the live presentation now to because the camera is a completely different system. I mean, somewhat. I think, once again, it's all belief system. So I really work with people on their communication with a certain message, around a certain message. Although I have a certification in life coaching, I do currently have three clients that are just working with me on their life coaching, on their accountability, on showing up and getting stuff done. And it just, it varies, but that's not really my main focus. I guess I started with them as speakers, and then they're like, I really want to continue working on this. And then every now and again, they'll have something presentation will pop up and we'll shift gears and we'll work on that presentation and we'll go back to the, somewhat creative, but yeah, any form of communication where there's a message and somebody wants to get more confident, more empathetic, become a better listener, because at the end of the day, your audience will always tell you what they want to hear, right? The famous story that I have, I mean, I used to hear that all the time in stand-up, like, you know, you need an hour of material to do 20 minutes. So, you know, if you start doing dog jokes and the audience don't like the dog jokes, suddenly you've got to put those away and you've got to pull out the, you know, the train jokes. And all the train jokes are working great. Then I'll go into the plane jokes. So, you know, it just, that's sort of the concept of listening to the audience. And I experienced it many times when I didn't listen to the audience, how everything went south. And when I did listen to the audience, how I had this amazing communication with them that wasn't necessarily spoken. I mean, I'm doing all the jokes, right?
Can I ask a question on that? Mm-hmm. So obviously in stand-up comedy, I could see that how that would work, right? At stand-up comedy, I got my hour of material. I kind of read the audience. I throw a few things out there to temperature check them. They're not biting on this. Maybe they're, you know, and there's a thing, and I don't know if you've done work around like spiral dynamics and mindset, right? So there's maybe an authoritarian versus autocratic, pluralistic, strategic, right? So if I'm in Silicon Valley, it's different than if I'm in Minnesota, different than I'm in New York, different than I'm in Texas, right? These people have different values. So the jokes aren't going to land the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So I get that. Let's switch gears though and say, hey, Darius wants to do a keynote, right? Like, I can't like, oh shit, my material's not landing on my keynote. I'm going to switch gears and like change my keynote. How does that work in a keynote or for an executive that is doing like a canned speech? I'm a little bit confused on that.
Yeah. Well, so essentially your audience is probably there because they want to be, because they've paid for the conference or they've chosen to come into your keynote versus another person's keynote or, you know, whatever. So we'll go from the perspective, because with comedians, you don't always, you just pay the ticket, you go, you don't necessarily always go to see Eddie Izzard, right? You might just not know who's in the lineup that night. But think of it from the perspective that your audience is basically chosen to be there. So I've never experienced an audience who want you to fail, right? Who are like, oh, I hate that guy. So I'm going to see his whole presentation.
The worst.
It sucks, you know? That's, we know that about our employees, if they're forced to sit in your presentation. But so we're coming from the perspective of the audience want to be there. They're super interested in what you have to say. So then you know who your demographic is. So you want to understand that demographic. So so you clearly come up with content and you talk to that demographic in a way that they understand, figure out what their jargon is, know what their language is. Know what they're going to want to hear, understand what's cool in their environment, you know, like what gets them going, what makes them go, yeah, like certain, you know, I mean, even like accountants, perfect example. I've got a client who his keynotes are often to accountants, right? Super boring people, generally.
But and funny. Very funny
accountants, especially with numbers. And we developed his presentation with humor in it and all that kind of stuff for accountants, right? I did a deep dive with him, like digging through his experiences with accountants. Okay, what are they like? What kind of questions do they ask? When do they go for the jugular when you've got, you know, information? Like, what, you know, when do they argue with you? So we were able to pull out essentially content that he's heard from them in the past from his experience, right? So The way that works is that you do your homework. You don't just show up and throw toilet paper at the wall and hope something sticks. And that's where the conversation is, because he's heard this, heard that, heard this, heard that, heard this, heard that, figures out, pulls out the things that are nuggets that he can turn into really juicy stories and information so that they essentially feel heard, because he's going, what about this thing? Oh, my God, yeah. And I've experienced this. Have you experienced it? Oh, my God, yeah. See, that's how the conversation goes when you don't, you have to do your homework.
Interesting. So if someone, and this is going out there for all my entrepreneur CEO friends who are listening right now, because a lot of these people have to speak in front of audiences, right? Or they have to speak in front of their team. With their team, it's different because they're kind of like paid to sit there and watch, right? I mean, but it's different when you got to go out there and talk to people you don't necessarily know. Maybe this is when you're selling. When I'm hearing you talk right now, I'm like, this is a great example of I'm trying to influence someone's behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it's a sales prospect, whether I'm trying to go get a job, whether I'm trying to win over an audience, whether I'm trying to win over someone I'm trying to date, it's getting to know what is it that they care about is what I just heard you say. And mm-hmm. then picking my message, doing your homework to your point, to pick my message to resonate with them so I can get their attention and keep it.
And if you choose some piece of information that's kind of wrong or it hits in the wrong, you'll get a physical reaction from your audience. You know, if you're like, oh, that didn't work. So what do you want? Then you have to acknowledge it.
What do you do when you bomb? Because like I bombed, I didn't tell you the story. I went to TED in Vancouver. Uh-huh. And there's this thing called TED Active. Do you remember that?
No.
So when you did your TEDx event, was the last year they did TED Active. And it was like they always did a satellite. So when they did TED in Long Beach, they had TED Active in Palm Springs. And it was like, it's where all the young cool kids would go and all the old hedge fund people would go to TED. And it's very interactive. And a lot of the TED speakers will come and they'll speak there and it's fun. Anyway, so I go. And they're like, tell a story about a scar. And so I'm not going to tell the whole story because I'm going to make a joke. I'm going to pretend like I'm going to tell the story of John Wayne Bobbitt, which I don't know if you, yeah, dude, I went up and pretended like what happened, like I got John Wayne Bobbitted. And I wasn't horrified because I don't really get embarrassed, but it bombed. Like it was like people believed me, which was the problem.
that's okay. Interesting point. When I was going through my divorce, and another friend of mine, comedian, he was going through a divorce. And I tried some divorce material and it totally bombed. And when I got off the stage, he pointed out to me why. He goes, it didn't work, did it? And I was like, no. And he goes, you're too close to the pain. That when you talk about stuff, what you experienced was your audience had an inordinate amount of empathy for you.
Oh,
that's why you bombed, because they were horrified that this happened to you and they believed you. So you're obviously a good actor, you got to be real. You got to let them in on the joke or they're just going to be like, because the things that we laugh at are negative things. They're not positive things, right? But what you were talking about is something horrific. it's hard to make a joke about, you know, the Holocaust. Yeah, I mean, not that that was a Holocaust, but for one individual penis, that was the Holocaust.
Yeah. That was the Holocaust of penis jokes. By the way, guys, don't ever joke that you got your penis cut off in front of 500 people. They'll believe you. You want to know the funniest part of the whole story? The next guy that comes up. I just can't believe this happened. He tells the story about when he was a baby. and he starts taking off all his clothes and he has scars all along his whole body. And that basically his mom had to like cut like the pus out of his body and like suck it out with her mouth or something. And that he was scarred from head to toe and his mom saved his life. And in the middle of doing this, it's like crying his eyes out. And the whole crowd stands up and cheers. And I go to my buddy, I'm like, I am so fucking happy he just went next because no one remembers what I just did. So, yeah, it was awesome. I was like, whew, good thing. And he did it in like Spanish. He's like, mi abue, mi mama. Like he starts speaking Spanish and shit. And I was like, oh my God, that was really, it was very helpful that they had lots of empathy for him as well. But his was true and mine was a lie. I did not get my penis cut off, I swear. I have two children to prove it, okay?
Yeah. Maybe you got bubbled it after the.
testicles,
right? So that's where the. I mean, you can. They can inject the testicles and take the sperm out that way these days. I mean,
none of that should happen to me. You're taking this in the wrong direction. I'm
down a rabbit hole. Not a lot about.
I'm whole. I did not get. All right, we're moving on.
Okay.
So yeah, when people are bombing though. And you're giving some advice on how do you unwind that when you're bombed?
Yeah, so let's say you deliver a piece of information or you deliver a small story or something and it doesn't bode well with the audience. You'll know if you are listening to the audience and you're watching their reactions. You will know. You know, behavioral experts believe in some cases we have over 4,000 behaviors, and the interesting thing is. We can often do the poker face, but it'll pop out somewhere else on your body. And so if you know a lot about behavior, you can see it come from another area of the body. And 9 times out of 10, you'll get a general understanding if the audience is offended as a whole, because they'll do something like, you know, there'll be a sound, there'll be a shift in chairs. Something will happen, you know, if you do something funny, they'll laugh. So, I'll never forget, I was at this wedding. It was so amazing. It was on Tiburon, on the top of Tiburon Mountain, and it was off a cliff, and they were standing down by the cliff, and it was really funny because the bride wasn't crying, but the groom was, and so was the celebrant who was marrying them. So the two dudes were crying, and the bride was standing there going, what the hell is going on? And we at the end of the wedding, when he said, you may now kiss the bride, this massive eagle comes up from the cliff and hovers above them as they're kissing. It was like Mr. Eagle. It was so bizarre. This eagle comes up and it like stares at them and then it just turns and goes and flies away. And everybody, and there's like 50 people at the wedding, goes and then laughs at the same time because we literally had a communal sniff because we were all like, in that moment, that amazing moment together. So those things can happen positively and they can also happen negatively. So the audience will tell you if you're listening, and you really need to sort of transition. So when this is kind of complicated, it's simple to me, but it may sound complicated. So when I'm telling a story, the stronger that story is to me, the stronger the visuals will be in my head, okay? So if the story's not real, I've got to make that stuff up. So I've got to create a history and visions and people and taste and smell and all that kind of stuff to trick my brain into really believing the story. But if the story is real, it's really easy to tell the story because I have all the visions and the feelings and stuff. So when I'm telling that story, if I'm telling that story well and I'm super filled up with all the imagery and the sensory and all that kind of stuff, you as an audience member will see the story in your own way in your brain, right? You'll see San Francisco Bridge, Golden Gate Bridge. You'll see the fog around it, whatever that is that I'm talking about. Even if you've never been there before, you'll create a thing if you've never seen it.
Right.
So that's mirror neurons working, right? And now I have completely forgotten where I'm going with this because I was so into – oh, that's right. So what I do when I'm working with my audience so that I don't get too caught up in my story, because I really see it, like to the point where I almost don't see what's in front of me. I'm in my head and I'm picking the apple off the tree and I'm actually seeing, you know, like I'm super connected to it. So I have to go backwards and forwards between audience and story to check in, right? Come out of the story and the visuals, check with the audience that they're on board. You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay, cool. Go back. So I sort of do this transition biologically as I'm working and speaking with an audience. And what's interesting is like with the virtual stuff recently that I've been doing, if I can't see the audience, I'm imagining them.
Oh.
Right. And I do stuff like to engage them. I'll say stuff like, let's have a super interactive conversation here. And they know that it's complete BS because I can't see them. And I'll be like, so raise your hand if you're wearing your pajama pants. Yes. Okay, good. Got your coffee, your water, like what, you know, and I'll be like, okay, I'll ask them a question. And I'm like, I want you, because if we were live together, you know, we would be, you'd be yelling this back out to me. So just yell it out at your computer screen like I can hear it. So I'll ask a question and then I'll lean in, you know, I'll lean in for the answer. So I'm like, yeah, okay, okay, good, great. That's not the answer. This is the answer. And, you know, so there's stuff you can do if you're having fun with yourself. Your audience will, in their own way, have some fun too. Even in a virtual thing, my standard, I mean, I should tagline, I mean, well, the trademark, but this line as I use all the time is that if you're not having fun, neither is your audience.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You're in a shitty mood, so is your audience, and you will take them into that mood with you. I had a client who basically, she gave me a 20-30 minute presentation to analyze for her. That's another thing that I do. If you want to send me video footage, I will analyze it, like time code it. I mean, it takes me for about a 20-minute presentation, it takes me about an hour and a half because I start, stop, note, you know, and then I have a bunch of questions. So it's quite an interesting process. But I said to her.
Can I ask a question though? When you do that, so let's say someone, and like a lot of the stuff you just said right now, I'm like, I think a lot of people could benefit from that given, I mean, I have to do these talks right now on Zoom and I'm like, and I don't dread them. But a lot of the times it's like, I say it's talking to a wall. You're talking to a wall. Because they're on mute and like half the time they're like eating. And so I'm like, dude, this is fucking the worst, you know, because there's no interaction. So my question for you is when you are, obviously you're being smart about this and you're like, I'm going to like act as if I'm live and think about what I'd be doing and creating.
What would they be doing?
What are they doing? I'm creating a reality. I'm creating a bit of interaction, which it makes it more engaging. So my question for you is, when you are, let's say someone wants to hire you to come and let's say critique with their presentation, what is the, besides notes, what can they expect as far as a deliverable for them to end up with a much cleaner, tighter, more constructed presentation? How does that look?
Yeah, yes and no. It depends on where they're at. It depends on the level of where they're at and how cognizant they are of their stimulus value. So stimulus value means how do you stimulate me and how do I value it? Essentially judgment, like we're very judgy human beings. So, and we also are very biological. So whatever I take onto the stage with me, like I said, is going to be given. So what I do is I ask a lot of, based on the presentation and what I see, the behaviors that I see that you are emulating or delivering, there'll be questions that I might ask, like what happened before you walked on stage? Because you were in a very strange mood.
Right. And
what we think, we show. So right. if I'm super nervous and I'm telling myself, oh, my God, I suck at this, I'm going to go on stage oozing that message out of my body, even if my words are saying, I'm so happy to be here. This is an amazing day for me. I would just love to get paid.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Yeah, so it was like, what people don't realize is, so there was a theory back in the 40s that 93% of how we communicate was nonverbal. Now, depending on which specialist you talk to, nobody's actually done a study that absolutely proves it, but they say it's 73 to 93% nonverbals, right? So the way I explain this to my clients is I say, imagine that let's take the 93% metaphorical theory. It's 55% nonverbal movement, body language, and 38% tone of voice, and 7% being your words. Now, words are important, but they are accessories at the end of the day, right? Like, so I look at it like if your 93% is your body, your naked human body, and you've got to fill it up with brain and blood and heart and lungs and arms and legs and toenails and hair and all that kind of stuff so that you appear normal. And then the 7% are the clothes you put on top of it, right? So those clothes can be sparkly. They can be interesting. They can be grubby and homeless clothes. It depends on, you know, how you want to, whatever those words are and whoever your audience is. But if you are not, if that 93% is not filled up in a functioning working body, then essentially you're a pile of clothes on stage.
Right.
Because your words don't mean anything. And going back to the you method that I was talking about before, where I used to start with the content and now I start with the why, which is yourself, and then the you, which is us, the audience. Those are the two components that I work really strongly on first, and then we go to the content. But, you know, so you can't connect to an audience if you don't know what's going on here, and it doesn't matter what you're saying, and this is the example that I use, is because everyone's been at an event like a wedding or a funeral or a, you know, a party or something like that, where somebody's got up, stood up and said, I haven't prepared anything, I've got no notes. And they've taken us on this wild journey of laughter and sadness and emotions and blah, 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 blah. And maybe they just told a story, or maybe they just shared a couple of items that we never knew about that person or whatever. And nothing was prepared.
Right.
Because it was all here. And yeah. Because it was all here, the audience easily went and connected to it, right?
So is there something to be said? I mean, obviously, like, that's amazing when that happens, right? And I know we're getting near the end of the hour here. The hour flew by, of course.
Wow, so, yeah.
you got to run. But the U part, or the Y part on the U is, I know the Y and the U's all, I'm flipping it right now, but me, if I'm the speaker, mm-hmm. it's about me coming in, what, confident, ready, prepared, the I'm going to ooze whatever feelings that are that I want to like give off during the talk. I know my material. I'm ready to, you know, really, I show up, right? Is that what you mean by that?
And you also want to, I'll give you another expert that I could probably get you for your podcast, which is Mark Bowden, if you don't know who he is. I love him, and I'm going to have him on my webinar when I start with my online training comes out in fall. He talks about it depends, what is the result that you want, right? It's not about just the behaviors that you elude or the emotions or whatever, or the stories that you tell. What is the result that you want from your audience? Because if you know how to use biology and emotions and behavior and all that kind of stuff, you can elicit a result out of your audience. Look at magicians.
Right.
Magicians are the perfect example of that. So, but that's a big rabbit hole, and that does not happen overnight. That kind of stuff, you're talking years of experience.
Right.
But, you know, he talks about being inauthentic in order to become authentic. So people that are saying, I want to be my authentic self. Well, guess what? If you need to learn how to be a better speaker or a funnier speaker or a more empathetic speaker, well, then you've got to start being inauthentic with something that's super uncomfortable and outside your comfort zone in order to practice to one day being your authentic self as this amazing speaker. But you weren't that like 4 years ago, right?
Right. And so, is that the us part? Is that the part where you're being, because anyone could show up and say, I'm not going to prepare, I'm just going to come and be myself. And it either lands or it doesn't. But to your point, if it's all about the audience getting value and getting what they want and resonating. And if I say, I don't care about myself, all I care about is you getting what you want. Is that kind of what that is? Because then I have to prepare, do the homework.
A little bit. It's a conversation. I think of it as a tennis match or a conversation. So you have some things that you want, and you know that we have some things that we want. And if we both get what we want, we're happy.
Right.
Just the O part, which is the overall objective, the content, the whatever that is what goes in between the Y and the U, right? The overall objective. So how that content connects to the Y and the U is as creative as, you know, the moon and the stars. So it's
I love it. That's so cool. I know you got to run, and so I don't want to keep you. I mean, we could probably sit here and talk for 2 more hours. exactly. Everyone's like, Darius, dude, like, what's up, man? You just chopped it up and had a great conversation, and like, we didn't even get to ask questions. I'm like, too bad. I am unapologetic, just so you know, Stephanie, about the fact that this is my most selfish hour of my day. So screw all you. I love you, but screw you. Look, you're working with executives, you're working with speakers, you're working with coaches, you're working with people to help them elevate, get their message across, whether it's on the stage or on Zoom or, you know, in COVID times in their basement on camera. But it sounds like you're, you know, and by the way, everybody, like she came to me from Mr. Mike Cato, who was on the show, who we all know is freaking amazing. So I got introduced from Stephanie, from Mike. Mike, I love you. And
you really think Mike's listening to this right now? He's so busy in his own world.
I don't even care if he is. I still love him. but you guys, so obviously, look, why don't we go back through, how do they connect with you? Where do they find you? Your trainings come out. Give us some info on that. And
let's get to it. So I have a training, an online training that's coming out this fall. It is called Executive Storytellers Academy, or the Executive Storytellers Academy. The website is executivestorytellers.com. Well, Facebook group is, executivestoryteller.com. No S for the website. Okay. Executivestoryteller.com. The Facebook group and the Instagram is Executive Storytellers, because that's where we're all coming together as a group. On those Facebook and Instagram, and my LinkedIn is Stephanie Paul Inc. INC. You can reach out to me there. We're starting in sort of mid late September to amp up the marketing for the online training program. There's a plethora of options around it, from just straight virtual videos and content, and there'll be other options where you can send in videos that I analyze and give you feedback. There'll be you can have one-to-ones with me. We'll have a Facebook Live Q&A, once a week. There'll be some free online trainings and webinars and things like that where people can just come in and hear some more stuff about communication. So would love to, and I have a survey. So I'm like loving to hear right now what everybody wants to learn or understand or know more about. So if you reach out to me, I'll definitely be able to send that survey to you too, or answer any of your questions. And I have a book. I have an ebook, which is called The Why Guide to Story Hacking. And that is also at executivestoryteller.com. And if you want to purchase it, it's only an 85-page book, but it basically breaks down storytelling. I am offering a discount code. If you use capital H, capital A, capital C, capital K, hack, the number 4, and capital U, it'll give you $5 off the book.
Cool. You guys, so hack for you is the discount code for the ebook, executivestoryteller.com, and stephaniepaulinc.com. So we got all those. We'll drop those in the comments section so you guys can find that. If anyone's not on Facebook, you can go to Facebook and see it. Man, so much love here. I had so much fun. This is really, really cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got one more show tomorrow. Bob Glazer's coming on to promote his new book, Friday Forward, which is awesome. It's out this week on Amazon. I'm so grateful to Stephanie. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I had fun. Thank you for having me.
But guys, look, you know what to do. Share this. Follow us at The Real Darius M on Facebook. Go to my website, therealdarius.com. Sign up for the newsletter so you can get the updates on who the speakers are. We got book launch. Boom! Book's coming out. Woo! A week from Tuesday. I can't believe it. Holy fuck. And last but not least, subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can get the updates after the show in case you miss it, because I do a lot of shows and sometimes you guys are busy. Besides that, love you. Thank you, Stephanie. You are amazing. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, thanks.
Peace. See you guys.
Bye.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Guys, The Greatness Machine is all about two things: people who are living their passions and those who are creating greatness in the world. And we feature these messages and speakers so it can help you step into your greatness within your own life and your own business. If you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you're tuning in from and leave us a review. We love getting reviews for the show. If the episode made you think of someone who is leveling up in their business and life, print screen it, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to learn from one another. You can also go to our website, www.thegreatnessmachine.com. That's www.thegreatnessmachine.com. And on there, you'll see special tools to help you scale your business faster, show notes for the episode to help you integrate the lessons, and you will also get links that came out during the show. So on there, look, you can also grab a copy of my book, The Core Value Equation, which is a resource for helping CEOs and business leaders establish core values from their teams that don't suck. And mind you, a lot of them suck. Get access to this and more at www.thegreatnessmachine.com. With that said, you guys, look, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We out of here. See you guys next time. My lover.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.